Hello, welcome to another edition of the Detroit Bad Boys podcast. This is Matt Watson, and today I'm joined by Mike Payne and Sean Corp. How you guys doing?
Good. Hey, Matt.
Great.
Well, it's been a long time since we've got together to do one of these. Last time we did one was August, so I'd like to apologize to everyone for the delay. But the good news is we finally have some new topics to talk about. We're three games into the season. Unfortunately, the Pistons are still looking for their first win of the season. But I think, we're starting to see some trends, you know, maybe some things that we're happy about, some other things that we're, you know, maybe a little bit worried about. It's still early, but let's just dive right in. Let's follow the good, the bad, the ugly, right? And then we'll finish up with some questions going forward. But the good so far, let's start with the good news first. Team defense was something that Stan Van Gundy stressed in the beginning when he got here. I think the good news is, at least in the first two games of the year, the defense was good. It was better than it was at last year at times. Unfortunately, in the third game, the home opener on Saturday, that kind of went out the window a little bit. But I'm just kind of curious about your initial thoughts so far on the defense that Van Gundy has instilled so far.
Well, I think the good has been more sort of a general defensive approach. I think the execution has left a lot to be desired, especially sort of in the painted area, though it was nice to see in the third game with Greg Monroe back that he wasn't running all over the perimeter trying to guard pick and rolls. And you can see the conservative defensive principles he's trying to lay out there. And the system makes a lot more sense. The execution's still just not there with this group.
Yeah, I think that's true. And again, we're three games in, so sample size is something that we should be aware of. I think Andre Drummond in particular, he doesn't seem to be making a very big impact defensively. And I think part of that might be the fact that he's been battling foul trouble for pretty much, it seems like, all three games. In fact, that's reflected in just minutes played. He's only averaged 26.7 minutes in the first three games. So hopefully that will come around a little bit. That said, Drummond's defense has always been considered a work in progress, despite his supreme natural ability. You know, he has the ability to block shots, but you know, he doesn't do it quite as well as he should, quite as well as I think he will be. He will be able to at some point. Mike, what's your thought?
Well, I think that the defense so far that we've seen has been pretty lopsided. It's been surprisingly good on the perimeter. At least in the first two games, there was, you know, nobody in Denver or Minnesota that was producing anything from range, or basically any shot that any perimeter player was taking, we were defending well. Where we got into trouble was especially the power forward position and especially the center. Andre Drummond and Josh Smith's men were just basically leading both of those games. Had we played a little bit better defense, I think, you know, we could have seen a different outcome in both those games. But I was surprised at how poorly the opposing perimeter was shooting. Like you said, it could be a sample size issue. They could have just had cold hands. It could have been the start of the season and they weren't shooting as well as they were. Because I'm having a hard time, beyond Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, identifying what was the strength in the perimeter defense for those first two games.
Well, I think one thing you can say is at least there was less scrambling along the perimeter. So I think from what I've seen, communication seems a little better, and just the general conservative approach leaves people in a position where they're not having to react as wildly to a totally discombobulated defensive breakdown where they're trying to, you know, play whack-a-mole with all the holes in the defense. So I've been pretty impressed generally, but you mentioned Drummond. I'm struggling with this because he's never really suffered through problems with fouling before his first 2 years in the league. So I think maybe it's just he's having trouble executing Van Gundy's defensive approach, and maybe he's just getting a little too handsy. He wants to make an impact, so he's just trying too hard. Last year in Detroit, per 36, he only averaged 3.8 fouls. Through three games, it's 7.2. So obviously, you don't get that many fouls, and that's why he's not seeing the minutes he really should be seeing so far in the season.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, some of the fouls, I think, I'll reference the most recent game on Saturday against the Nets. it seemed like some of the fouls, he didn't seem to make them count, if that makes any sense. Like, it seemed like he was getting, he was maybe kind of throwing his hip into a player a little bit more when you'd like to, you know, if you're going to, if you're a big man and you're getting fouls, you'd like to maybe just be overly aggressive going for blocks instead of just trying to create space or something like that. So, I mean, that was, it's not something that I'm really worried about. I think he's shown enough over his first 2 years that that'll just kind of even itself out. And right now we're just looking at it's just pure sample size. But I mean, last year per 36, it wasn't too bad, but he did lead the league in personal fouls, just in terms of aggregate with 273. So, I mean, this isn't something that's new to him. It's just maybe just the timing has been the best. You know, picking up his fourth foul early in the second half, that really kind of hamstrung his ability to make an impact down the stretch. And down the stretch, against the Nets at least, is when things really started to fall apart in the fourth quarter. So, I mean, you know, it's a little depressing that, you know, we haven't really been able to see like this true, you know, with Monroe's suspension the first two games and with Drummond being hampered by foul trouble, we haven't really been able to see how exactly Van Gundy is thinking of using his three big men, what kind of rotation we're going to see with those guys. It's still kind of, you know, we're just going to have to let this play out a little bit. But yeah, I will say that he was, you know, overall, it's just been a little disappointing, which to preface this was supposed to be the good part of the podcast.
But, well, they are 0-3.
So. Yeah, they are 0-3. As far as the perimeter defense, you know, obviously his playing time has been limited for his play on both ends of the court. But I did think it was interesting just in terms of Brandon Jennings. Van Gundy had showed, you know, no reluctance whatsoever to basically pull players that he didn't think was putting in the type of effort that he needed. He played 20 minutes in the opener. He played 15 minutes in the second game of the season. I thought, unfortunately, it came in yet another losing effort, but I thought on Saturday against the Nets, Brandon Jennings played his best game of the season by far. He played 36 minutes. It is a little curious to see, curious isn't the right word. It's very encouraging to see Van Gundy, because he has a deep bench, it is encouraging to see him just pull players who he doesn't think are playing, you know. And he was very emphatic about that after the second game. He basically said that the players in the court, the starters, to open the second half, basically were willing to let the game go away. You know, maybe that was just some old habits coming in from, you know, this is a team that is not very accustomed to winning, and they are accustomed to being, to letting, long runs and losing games in an instant. But, you know, I am very encouraged by Van Gundy, his willingness to just pull players. You know, reputations, he's not letting any kind of reputations or contracts or anything like that dictate his playing time. He's just going to put the guys out there who are playing hard and are getting putting forth the best effort.
I would love to agree with that. I definitely agree with that about Jennings. I'm a little concerned with Van Gundy's usage of Josh Smith. I would think that if he wasn't, you know, impacted by reputation or contract, he may not be using Josh Smith to the level that he has in the offense. I realize that there's, you know, been a big hole behind Josh Smith in the lineup, but to not even touch Jonas Jerebko last night and just give, you know, Smith, what, 44 minutes a game for 44 minutes last night?
Right.
It's been a little concerning. But before we go back to that part, I did want to talk about Jennings really quick. One thing that I've noticed in the last three games and in the preseason, I haven't seen any hero ball out of Brandon Jennings. Is that just me, or have you guys experienced the same?
I've definitely seen a lack of that type of play from Jennings. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, as much as people were down on Jennings the first two games before he kind of, I wouldn't say broke out his third game, but, you know, actually made an impact. But those first two games, I don't personally think that had a lot to do with Brandon Jennings' play on the court. I think it's natural for a lineup to kind of feel out what the other four guys are doing around him. And there was just no place for Jennings to really make an impact when he was on the court, just because the offense didn't really go through him those first couple games. And, you know, his backup was playing well, so there was really no reason to go back to Jennings. So, yeah, I'm higher on Jennings than a lot of people as far as his potential under a Van Gundy type coach, or in this case, actual Van Gundy coach. But I don't think that he, you know, deserves to lose his starting job or anything just because he couldn't really make an impact those first couple games. I'm still high on his potential this year.
You know, one thing that I remember happening last year, Jennings basically admitted that he was a little caught up in his head. He was thinking too much on the court, trying to be a distributor, trying to he was just overthinking things as he was playing. And at a certain point last year, he basically just told everybody, like, you know what, I'm just going to be Brandon Jennings. I'm just going to go out there and play. And I will say that when he was at his best against the Nets in the, you know, in his best game of the season, it was really encouraging to see the way that he made some really instinctive plays, right? Like he had that really slick fast break where he basically just took a rebound, dribbled once, and then threaded the needle. I believe it was to KCP to finish the break between two players. And then he had the other one where he basically faked out not only his defender but Josh Smith, where he looked like he was going to kick it back to Smith. And then all of a sudden it was just wide open court, and he had that nice little scoop layup. And, like, those are the types of plays that you can't think about, right? Like, you can't orchestrate. You can't – it's just you see the opportunity there and you just go for it without any kind of hesitation. And he's the type of player, and he has such a really good natural passing ability, but also he can score too. And I think it's just – when he was just making those really instinctive plays, like no time to overthink it, no time to think about like how does this fit into the offense or anything like that. Like it was just like, here's an opportunity, boom, let's do it. You know, it was really fun to see him kind of he felt really comfortable out there, right? Like it felt like he really belonged out there as opposed to, you know, maybe looking over his shoulder at Augustin. Augustin, you know, Jennings was solid in the preseason. Augustin was basically just as good, shooting a little bit better. It was just good to see. I mean, granted, he was still 6 of 14 from the field last night. I can't quite remember exactly when all the shots came. I kind of consider the fourth quarter a little bit of a wash because that's just been basically like all the wheels fell apart. But overall, I was pretty pleased with his progress and just the way that he responded to that that big, you know, amount of controversy that I don't think he expected after those first two games of really limited playing time and having to look over his shoulder.
Yeah, and I think one important distinction there is, you know, we did kind of see the same thing last year where he was trying to be a distributor and then he eventually decided he needed to just play his game. And you saw a little bit of that last night, but it was different in a key way. And of course, you know, take a shot every time we say sample size, but this is only one game. But what you did see was he didn't just shoot. It wasn't just sort of, I'm going to get my offense and take a bunch of shots. He really focused on attacking into the paint and trying to either, you know, score inside or get a passing opportunity and a shot for another player. And I think that's exactly what Van Gundy is preaching to him as far as his role. I mean, he knows what Brandon Jennings brings as a shooter, and it's not nearly as much as he brings as a passer. And while he doesn't finish inside to a very great degree, just the fact that he was getting into the teeth of the defense, I think, was a positive development as this offense kind of learns what it needs to do with the personnel.
Right. You know, his decision-making last night, you were talking about that penetration. His decision-making was unlike anything I've seen out of Brandon Jennings in a long time. I mean, the lack of hero ball is what's really hitting me, but seeing his decision-making when he does have the ball has just been really impressive. He's playing a game unlike what we've normally seen out of him, and I think that he owes a lot of that to Stan Van Gundy. He might owe some of that to DJ Augustine nipping at his heels a little bit. But whatever's making it happen, I hope it continues, because if we can expect more of this type of play out of him, we could see point guard as a bright spot for the first time in, I don't even remember.
I think Drake might get some credit, maybe Johnny Manziel. They seem very integral to his life.
Moving on, another player that I thought looked really well, and again, you know, sample size, Greg Monroe in his first game back. It was his first time he came off the bench since his rookie year. But he really provided something that was missed in the first two games. Like, it, you know, once again, Drummond was in foul trouble, but they could go to Monroe, and Monroe was super efficient. He scored 18 points. He had 11 rebounds. He played 30 minutes. You know, maybe if we can get that type of production out of him for 30 minutes, then, like, you know, I'm really encouraged, especially since I think the other guys will kind of catch up to speed. But what was your initial impressions of Monroe?
You know, it was basically a great example of what I've been thinking for quite a while with regard to the trio between himself, Josh Smith, and Andre Drummond. We only have one front court scorer, one capable front court scorer that can handle the ball, can produce on his own, and basically act as a point of distribution. We have a player in Josh Smith who thinks he can do all those things, but that's exactly where he gets the team in trouble, is when he tries to initiate the offense. He thinks of himself as a scorer, and he's just not. Josh Smith at 7 or 8 field goal attempts per game would be a plus player, most potentially. The difference between those two and Andre Drummond as well is that Greg Monroe is just a natural scorer. He brings an offense that we don't have, that very few teams have up front. And I think that people tend to overlook that. People look at the front court and they think, well, Josh Smith has range. He has range to shoot, but he doesn't make those shots. It's just, you know, kind of a waste of an offense. So after seeing how things played out in the last two games, after seeing, you know, Greg Monroe shine in the preseason, I feel pretty confident that Stan Van Gundy is beginning to realize just how important and vital Greg Monroe is to the success of this team, whether that's on the bench or in the starting position at the power forward. It's just, I mean, he looked like a difference maker last night. If the defense didn't fall apart on the perimeter, it would have been the difference maker. But that's something that I think we're going to need to hold on to tightly as we move forward.
Yeah, I mean, it was no coincidence that the Pistons made their run back into the game with him on the floor. And when they took that lead and Van Gundy sat him just for some rest, the lead vanished. Everything quickly fell apart just because there's no offensive focal point in this lineup without Monroe on the floor, especially with some key perimeter guys out with injury and no one else making any shots. I mean, there's just this offense is based on penetration and, you know, motion and finding your open guy. Well, a defense doesn't have any reason to react to anything if nobody on the floor can hit a shot. They're just going to, you know, stay back, kind of keep their man in front of them, and the Pistons are forced to take some really bad shots. That's why I think, you know, as much as I don't want to bag on Jennings for his poor performance, I think Augustin has played even better than his numbers indicate, just because he's basically a one-man show out there. He's got no one really to play with as far as an offensive threat, and so everything he's getting is sort of like a Herculean effort. And so, I mean, I don't envy the task of Van Gundy figuring this offense out and just waiting for some of these shooters to start connecting, but, I mean, it's really got to happen.
Yeah, you know, before we talk too much about the shooters, one last point that I like to make about Monroe. You know, Mike, you said that he was, like, basically our only reliable front court scorer. He had a couple of plays. He had at least two plays that really stuck out, and I wish I could remember who was defending him. But he basically had, like, a combination of, like, two or three little spin moves that he put together, and it was just, like, very seamless, very, you know, a little up and under. It was one of those types of plays that, like, you know, it's almost cliche in the NBA, but you see it happen, and you're like, oh, you know, did he spend his summer working with Olajuwon? Like, it was very, very smooth, very natural. Like, he just looked... he looked really good out there, and it was really cool to see after missing him for the first two games. And it was like a very clear indication of, like, okay, this is a different team. Like, if we get him, you know, if he plays 80 games this year, it's a completely different team than it was for the first two games. That's why I think you really have to take those first two games with a grain of salt.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, let's talk a little bit about let's move on from the good. Let's talk a little bit about the bad. The offense. The offense has been pretty awful so far. Van Gundy was pretty clear that in the preseason he was stressing defense, and a lot of the things that they need to do on offense, it's catching up to them. Through three games, they're dead last in points per game. We went out and signed a bunch of three-point shooters, and so far through three games, they're 29th in three-point shooting. And then even just the old problem from last year, free throw shooting, they're 28th in free throw shooting. You know, these haven't been particularly close games. I think the closest game was 6 points, but those types of things add up, and those types of things kind of change the flow of the game. And last night in particular, I thought the three-point shooting, 1 of 12, just it was completely awful. Like, it was, if this is supposed to be one of the one of the things that, that was supposed to help the Pistons make this, this great improvement this year, was supposed to be their improved 3-point shooting. And so far we just haven't seen it at all. Let me correct myself. They were 1 of 17 last night, against the Nets. It was, they couldn't hit a 3-point shot to save their life. Some of that is, you know, once the game started to slip away, they just kind of had to heave up some shots, to try to close that gap in the closing minutes. So take that with a grain of salt. But overall, we're not seeing any of the kind of huge improvement there that, that we thought we're going to see. Obviously, Jody Meeks is still out, and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope hasn't looked anything like he did in the preseason or in the summer league. He basically is reverted back to his rookie year. And, you know, I think that'll come around. You know, it should come around. Shooters just got to keep shooting. You know, and Josh Smith, to his credit, he's only attempted 6 3-point shots, which, you know, I think is probably 5 too many. But still, like, what are your initial impressions about that?
It really presents a conundrum because, like you said, I mean, these guys just have to keep shooting. So Van Gundy's charge is, you know, how long do you just let KCP and Kyle Singler and Caron Butler work through these issues? Because, I mean, really, what else are you going to draw up if you don't want those guys taking 3-point shots? There's really, you know, no other alternative, really. You can't have 5 guys going toward the basket. So, I mean, there's not much you can do except for design these plays, give these guys open looks, and just hope eventually they fall. I mean, Josh Smith has shot too much overall, but other than his, you know, inordinate amount of shots that he's hoisting up, the shot distribution among the rest of the team looks pretty solid. You're seeing the guys shoot the ball about as much as you want them to, and they're shooting from the places you want them to take those shots.
I'd like to back up just a little bit and talk about the overall offense. So kind of like last year, the problem that we're having so far is that our worst shooters are taking most of our shots. So between Josh Smith and KCP, we've got, there's 95 shots taken between the two of them, and they're collectively, their true shooting is below 40%, which is just unreal. I mean, if you try that much volume for such low efficiency, you're going to have a poor offense. I will say, though, that both of those is kind of out of necessity. I hope that Van Gundy doesn't continue at that rate because, you know, Josh Smith now has Monroe back, so he can rely on Monroe more for shouldering the offensive load in the front court. And KCP is kind of at a necessity, too, because Jody Meeks is out. So you've basically been relying on two players that haven't been efficient with such a large volume of shots that overall the offense just looks terrible. But it's artificial. It's not real. It will improve so long as Stan Van Gundy begins to rely more on Greg Monroe instead of Josh Smith and more on Jody Meeks when he returns if KCP's shots aren't falling. But with regard to the 3-point shooting specifically, I mean, so far, only Kyle Singler has been a plus 3-point shooter, but he's also leading the team in bad haircuts and bad defense. You know, beyond him, DJ Augustine, Caron Butler, Jonas Jerebko are making an okay amount of shots. Yeah, it's just the primary guys that Sam Van Gundy signed to hold that role are either gone, Meeks and Martin, or the guys that are on the court right now for the Pistons just aren't doing that well. So I think that over time, that's going to improve. When we get Meeks back, the 3-point shooting is going to improve there as well. And I don't think there's going to be as much reliance on Josh Smith up front to carry the offense. So I think going forward, this is going to be a very easy situation to resolve, just by measure of having the right players back at the right time.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's one of those things that's just going to fix itself. And until they get that first win, I think it's going to be something that's really easy to look at and worry about superficially. But shooters don't generally just lose their ability to shoot. And, you know, I'm not so worried about KCP. I think he, you know, maybe he dominated the ball a little bit more than he should have, especially in the opener in Denver. But those shots will fall eventually. They have to, right? Like we're talking about 3 games here. You could pluck any 3 games, and it just so happens that all of them, you know, all the shooters on the team, that they've been pretty awful. It's been a pretty bad drought. But it doesn't seem that it's really a function of the offense or anything like that. Like I can't remember if it was Sean or Mike, but one of you just said, you know, they're taking the shots that you want them to take, generally speaking. You know, I think Smith is he's still taking those long twos. I think Smith kind of fancies himself like a like an Antonio McDice with 3-point range or something, which he's not, right? Like, you don't.
I think he's literally the opposite of Antonio McDice in every way.
Well, he like every time I see him taking that shot, I always think of McDice because he's taking the same that long two. Like McDice was kind of the anomaly among NBA players, where it's like that was his shot, and you're fine with him taking it because he was just really good at it. And I was actually wondered, you know, going back to like when we're having these same complaints about Rashid taking too many 3-pointers. I always wondered, like, couldn't McDice just take one step back and be a 3-point shooter? Like, it's not that much different of a shot, but he was just so disciplined that he never thought of himself as a 3-point shooter. So he was fine taking that 19 footer. Unfortunately, Smith, you know, like I said, he's doing the same thing, but Smith does have the ability, and he has shown it on occasion of, you know, driving towards the basket and taking that more efficient shot. But, you know, as far as guys like KCP and Augustine, like they're going to work themselves out of it, but I just hope that they do it at some point soon before 0-3 turns into 0-6 or 0-8 or something like that. You know, I don't want this team has so much potential that I'm just kind of nervous. Maybe I'm just kind of been burned so often by Pistons teams in recent years that I just don't want them to fall into such a deep hole earlier in the season when it just kind of sets the tone that, yes, this is a losing team. You know, I don't want that mentality to set in.
The only point of concern I have about Pope is we don't really have evidence of him being a plus shooter in the NBA yet. Last season, he was a 32% three-point shooter. He ended the season well, but we don't really have anything to hold on to that, you know, we can point to say, well, you know, if he keeps shooting, he'll fall back to that point. It's still pretty shaky. We can look at the summer league, we can look at the preseason, feel a little bit better, but when he's had NBA minutes, it hasn't materialized yet. So I'm a little worried about that. I'm hopeful, but I'm a little worried.
Do you think that's mental? Do you think that's coincidence? Do you, I think last year, I'm kind of willing to treat last year as an exception just because he was the fourth or fifth option. And I think it seems like this year he's trying to get comfortable as being like one of the primary options, especially with Meeks out. What do you think? Do you think that's just mental and that'll come, or do you think that maybe that's something that we should actually be worried about?
Well, you know, it depends. I just pulled up the split stats from last year because I'm a giant dork, and he closed out the month of April shooting 41%. He had another decent month in December shooting 38%, but the rest were just pretty poor. I don't know if it's mental, but if he has performed well in the preseason and the summer league, and then again in a small sample in college, it could just be the competition. It could be that he's, you know, the speed and the size of the defender is giving him issues. He may overcome that. But I really don't know. I'm just, my only concern is that there's nothing that I can really point to that says, see, KCP has the capacity of being a good three-point shooter, and we can rely on him to eventually move back to that, because I don't see that we have that, unfortunately.
Yeah, and even this year in the preseason, it was very abbreviated because of his injury in Washington. So he ended up missing over half of the preseason. I don't know. I still think that he has it. I think it'll come around. But I mean, you know, I'm curious what all of our thoughts will be a month from now, if we'll just kind of think that, you know, if laugh at ourselves at worrying about such a small sample size, or if it's just going to be, you know, an indication of something to come. But I don't know.
It sure seems like this team, or I imagine Van Gundy really wishes he had at least Cartier Martin dressing and available, because, you know, he could spell Singler or KCP, and, you know, those guys have struggled with their shot, and he really doesn't have anywhere else to turn for offense or three-point shooting or perimeter defense. And that sort of, Martin's kind of, you know, he's not going to be a world beater, but just, you know, to see if he had something that could, you know, open up the offense when these other guys were misfiring, the fact that that was not even something that he could turn to, I think really hampered the team the first couple games.
Yeah, KCP, he's averaged 39.3 minutes in the first few games. That's, you know, by far the most on the entire team. And for a guy who's struggled as much as he has, it kind of, you know, it's not too surprising that the Pistons are winless. If arguably the worst starter, just in terms of production so far, has been playing the most minutes. Yeah, I mean, that obviously kind of leads to bad results.
Well, I mean, if you look at the stats, Josh Smith has attempted the second most field goal attempts of anyone in the NBA, and KCP is in the top 20, and they've both shot, you know, a horrible percentage overall. So it's, you know, that leads to 0-3.
I do have one more thing to say about KCP's three-point shooting. If for some reason it doesn't materialize, if we don't see it the first half of the year or at all this year, it's not going to be a huge problem. I think because Stan Van Gundy has put together a pretty impressive and versatile backcourt. So if KCP's shots aren't falling, he could be paired with DJ Augustine, who does have a very nice outside shot, and together that could comprise a pretty productive duo. KCP could be more like a Tony Allen type defensive focus, while Augustine plays off the ball when somebody in the front court has it, and he'll handle most of the three-point shooting responsibilities. And then if Meeks, you know, has a really great outside shot, he can be paired with Jennings, who isn't a premier three-point shooter, and together they can comprise a pretty productive duo. So I think if something happens, we don't see KCP's shot materialize right away, it's not going to be a really dire problem for the team. Stan Van Gundy can address that with different rotations. So I think we'll be okay. I'm hopeful that the shot starts falling, but if it doesn't, it's not going to be a huge problem going forward, at least I don't think.
Right, and I think this is sort of a sign of Van Gundy's view of the long game. And I think Kentavious is executing, you know, to the best he can, exactly what his coach wants. And I think Van Gundy really does view him as one of the primary offensive weapons on the perimeter, you know, in an optimal situation. And so I think he's basically giving his players sort of a long leash to just kind of work things out, because he knows that, you know, if the Pistons are firing on all cylinders this year, that means that KCP is a threat from three. He can drive, he can finish at the rim, and, you know, he's sort of that, you know, knifing offensive presence that can really open up the offense for everyone else, some more traditional three-point shooters. So for now, you just have to deal with it.
So I have a question. So I run the you know, Brian Packy and I, we run the Detroit Bad Boys Facebook page, and it's funny that the tone of the comments there seem to be a little bit different sometimes than the tone of the comments of the game thread. I think the game thread tends to be like maybe a little bit more your hardcore fans. A lot of people were kind of, I was kind of taken aback by, you know, we had posted something about Smith, about how, you know, his shooting. And a lot of the results were like, well, how come you're not blaming it on KCP? Like, you know, he's been even worse, blah, blah, blah. Like, so just kind of taking a step back, maybe not from a pure analytical perspective, but just like, you know, as fans, well, you know, what's fair and what's not fair? Like, is it fair to give KCP a pass because, you know, oh, he has the ability, he just has to shoot through it. And is it maybe, you know, not as fair to keep calling Josh Smith out for a shooting, even though, you know, he's not taking as many three-pointers, but he's still taking long twos? Like, I'm just kind of curious about, like, you know, this is more of a less, you know, basketball analytics, but just kind of like the ethics of fandom, or however you want to call it. Like, what kind of, like, how should we be reacting to this? Like, is there a difference there? Like, is it fair to say that there's a difference there, and because KCP's never actually proven it? You know, what are your thoughts?
I think there's absolutely a difference between the two. If you're leading the team in minutes, leading the team in shot attempts, leading the team in salary, you're supposed to be the team's defensive leader, but you're failing every single part of your job responsibility, I think you absolutely should get the most criticism. That's part of the role of being the leader in any of those things. Meanwhile, KCP, his replacement is injured. So it's him on his own. And, you know, the last two games, there's been some issues with Jennings. It's just, you know, it's hard to give him an equal amount of blame as somebody like Josh Smith, who was brought in here with very high expectations based on past results. Whereas KCP is still new. He's still growing. And, you know, I think that it's not an even one-to-one comparison. I can understand that somebody, a little bit of a less casual fan, would feel a little bit betrayed that, you know, somebody who's normally so likable in Josh Smith, and I say normally likable meaning his whole career, doesn't get the same amount of appreciation as somebody like KCP. But I think that it's fair for fans to judge them differently. And I think it's fair for fans to be a little bit harder on Josh Smith, given how much he's costing the team and how involved he is in every single aspect of the game. So that's my two cents anyway.
Right. And I think it's all about, you know, is there a method to the madness, right? So is the underlying principle that's leading to these shots, do you see how they help the team? And it's hard to see that with Jennings, or I'm sorry, with Smith, simply because, you know, he has a 10-year history of shooting a lot from the perimeter, long twos and threes, and having literally almost no consistent success with it. So, I mean, the book is closed on that chapter. You know, he's not going to become the kind of shooter that his shot profile says that he thinks he is. He's just not that good of a shooter, and he needs to do the things that make him successful. Whereas with Pope, you know, he's a young player, he's still trying to figure things out, and you just want to build up his game and build up his confidence to take those shots, and, you know, hopefully that leads to him making those shots. And even if Smith was a guy like, you know, Rasheed, it's sort of ironic that this is the same team that, you know, employed Rasheed Wallace, because he, you know, he drove the hardcore fan base absolutely crazy with his three-point shooting. And because he had such a great low post game, and fans would just beg him to get down into the post, and it was driving him crazy. But if Smith was even just as good as Rasheed was, and he wasn't a prolific three-point shooter by any stretch, but at least it made the shot somewhat sensible, and because of the way the defense had to react to it, you also, you know, it opened up things for other players. You heard Kenneth Faried talk about, we were just hoping Smith would keep shooting outside shots, and he did, and he shot them out of the game. I mean, that's literally part of the defensive game plan of opponents. So for Smith to play into those hands and not do things he's better at offensively, that's where that criticism comes from.
You know, that is actually a perfect segue to the ugly part of our discussion for the podcast. Even as a Pistons fan, right, like I should have maybe been upset. Maybe I should have, you know, I don't know what the appropriate reaction was. But I was really amused by Kenneth Faried, by his comments after the game. I actually was watching on League Pass, and I actually saw it live, the immediate post-game comments from the Nuggets TV crew, where they asked him about it. And he literally said, he just kept shooting. We gave him the shot, and he kept shooting, and he shot them out of the game. What are your thoughts on an NBA player just being so blunt about that, talking about another NBA player? Obviously, Smith didn't really appreciate it. He had some really – I thought he had a really unfortunate reaction. He basically said, I'm not going to talk about a player with dreadlocks that plays basketball, and then proceeded to talk about him a lot. And also, you know, side note, perhaps completely oblivious to the fact that Cartier Martin has dreadlocks and plays basketball. But I thought that was a kind of an amusing little feud. Maybe I'm just always kind of like looking for rivalries, and, you know, I don't want to read too much into it, but Josh Smith basically said, like, you know, he better watch out next time that we, you know, next time we face each other. And he also had some choice words about the fact that he said that after the game, and he didn't talk during the game. What was your reaction to that whole little tiff?
You know, I thought it was totally within reason for Faried to say that. He wasn't knocking Josh Smith. He wasn't saying anything negative about Josh Smith's game as a player. He wasn't talking about his person. He was simply speaking about what happened in the flow of the game. He wasn't calling Josh Smith a chucker. He wasn't saying that Josh is a poor shooter. He would have been right to say that because it's accurate. But, you know, he was basically commenting on the fact that Smith was shooting poorly. He kept getting the ball, so they let him shoot because he was shooting him out of the game. And it's just a fair commentary on the game strategy, and I don't think there was anything wrong with that. Smith's comments in response were just silly. I mean, if you're going to respond to someone and say, I'm going to bust your ass next time, like, why didn't you do that the first time around? Why didn't you give him any reason to be intimidated the last time you guys played? But you didn't defend him. You didn't shoot well against him, it was just a total wreck. So I think Fareed was all right. I think that it's a very delicate line that if he had added any editorialization at all about Josh Smith, then it would have been over the line. But he was simply talking about the flow of the game and what happened, and he was being honest about that, and I don't think it was bad.
What cracked me up was, I thought the initial comments were amusing, and I didn't really think too much of them until after Smith responded. But Smith, you know, I'm quoting it here from M Live. He said, "In order to make comments like that, you've got to be able to back it up, man. And we're going to see what happens next time. I'm going to have some words while I'm busting his ass. Know what I'm saying? While I'm busting his ass, I back up what I talk. So it's going to be a pretty good matchup." Do you think Josh Smith actually looked at the box score? Do you think that Josh Smith realized that Fareed had 22 points and 17 rebounds?
I think we cracked the code. I think that Josh Smith has like an out of body experience as soon as the whistle goes, and maybe he just doesn't know what happens on the court, you know, after the 48 minutes is up, and he just, you know, relies on what people tell him afterwards. Because the worst part of the comments for me were when Smith said he's scared of me. I think that was part of the comments initially. I was like, what exactly was scary? The fact that he dominated you? The fact that you totally played into his hands? The fact that, you know, he has no reason to fear this matchup based on what just happened? It was like he was totally oblivious to everything that had transpired.
You hear of some players who, you know, they're notorious stat stuffers. They have empty stats just to kind of boost the box score. I think Josh Smith, for better or worse, might be the exact opposite. Like, he might be a guy who literally never picks up a box score after the game, never realizes, like, holy shit, I'm a really bad shooter. Like, he just doesn't, it doesn't click, right? Like, it's kind of like the, you know, when people talk about the difference between a 275 baseball hitter and a 300 hitter. Like, if you go to every game, you know, if you're a season ticket holder, it's hard to notice the difference between those just by doing the eye test. And I think, like, Josh Smith, like, maybe he just kind of goes by gut and he just thinks, like, yeah, I make three-point shooters. I make three-point shots, completely oblivious to the fact that, you know, he misses, you know, 6 out of 7. Like, he's not very good at it. But, yeah, he's completely clueless in that regard.
It's a very comforting as a Pistons fan.
yeah, usually that would be a trait that you kind of – that would be a compliment, right, that they're oblivious to the – individual accolades, but man, that's something. I got a kick out of that. That's one of those things that, like, you know, maybe I should have been, like, a little bit more defensive or taken offense at Fareed's comments, but, and not even because I have, like, you know, a certain feeling towards Smith anyways. Like, I just cracked up at the sheer obliviousness that he had towards that whole situation.
It's like driving the car wreck on the freeway. Like, you just can't help but look in amazement, you know?
Yeah. And then he followed it up the next day by shooting 5 of 16.
Striking more fear into that future matchup. This is just a taste of what's in store for Kenneth Fareed.
Watch your dreadlocks, Kenneth.
But, I mean, I think a lot of, you know, there's a certain subset of Josh Smith fans who think that, you know, collectively the Detroit Bad Boys hive mind is, you know, that we're really anti-Smith. And I'm not anti-Smith as a player. Like, he's a very skilled player. He has his ability to just make smart decisions is just lacking so much. Like, when he does a lot of things on the court that nobody else on the team can do, but he just doesn't do them enough. And it's just like, it kind of goes back to that Rashid thing where you just want to tell Rashid, like, hey, stay down on the post. But even Rashid, you know, when he was jacking up all those threes for the Pistons, even he shot 35%, you know. But but I digress. And we've talked about Smith all the time. I don't want to keep beating a dead horse, but I got kind of a kick out of that situation.
I think it might be worth just kind of chiming in about Detroit Bad Boys and the general mood towards Josh Smith. I think that it can be a little difficult to be a Pistons fan right now, and I don't think that Josh Smith is being scapegoated per se. I think that he's earning every ounce of criticism he gets, but I think that it should be pretty well understood that Smith can have a lot of value in the right situations. And it is an unfortunate situation for him too, not just us. Like, you know, there are areas around the league where he could be a plus player. like Sacramento, between two big shooters like Cousins and Rudy Gay, he'd be great in that situation where he could just rely on his defense and prove to be a plus player for his team. But, you know, we're not the only victims here. Josh Smith is probably not enjoying himself very much right now, unless he's totally oblivious to it all, which we just talked about. Who knows? But, you know, I sometimes catch myself feeling for Josh Smith when I'm not watching him play.
You know, one other thing, your comment kind of, yeah, I'd also like to take a moment to kind of explain the Detroit Bad Boys editorial process. To all of these people who think that there's some type of agenda against Josh Smith, I'd just like to make clear that outside of these podcasts, these are like literally the only times we ever talk on the phone. Like, there's no mass collaboration against Smith. There's no big agenda. We're not driving home like some type of, you know, collective mindset. Like, we have a pretty good collection of really smart people writing for the site. And if we're all kind of coming to the same conclusions independently, you know, that's not some type of conspiracy. That's literally just all of our observations independent of one another. But yeah, I think sometimes, you know, just with like the liberal agenda in media, right? Like, there's no top-down directive or anything like that. We basically, to kind of give everybody a peek behind the curtain, we have like an email list that we just kind of talk about, oh, I'm going to write this article, but we don't go super in depth about, and I'm going to assassinate Josh Smith and this, blah, blah, blah. Like, it's very ad hoc. It's very, you know, I'm actually kind of amazed at how comprehensive our coverage can be at times, given our lack of really clear central planning. But no, it's, like, there's no conspiracy, there's no agenda. Like, we're just basketball fans writing about basketball, and, you know, it just so happens that we have the same opinion on a certain player. But
even if we wanted there to be a conspiracy, we aren't organized enough to execute it.
We're not and I think we
it's
do a
giving
really
us way
job.
Too much credit.
Yeah, seriously, like, I think we do a really good job, but like, if people understood the process that went behind it, they might be a little bit surprised. You know, we're all very busy people. This isn't, there's not one of us, we're not able to devote, you know, this isn't a full-time gig for us. I work for SB Nation, but you know, this is still very much a side gig. We're recording this on a Sunday afternoon. I came into the office. This isn't like something that I do, full-time during the day. So, yeah, there's no conspiracy. This is, you know, this is just our opinions. And if people have
it, sad about that.
I was just gonna say, if people have like other opinions, and if people have other opposing viewpoints, then by all means, write like a, you know, very nice, intelligent fan post, and we'll gladly promote that. So,
and I'm actually sort of anxiously awaiting Josh Smith, power forward defender, to emerge this year, just so we can write about that sort of facet to his game that he's going to hopefully be able to lock down. But his defense has been probably even more disappointing than his offense so far this year. And if you really look at when he played power forward, granted it was probably mostly against reserves last year, but he had good defensive numbers in the paint. He got a good number of rebound percentage when he played the position. So it was just, you know, it's just unfortunate that he hasn't performed to that level that we could, you know, offer praise quite yet.
I was going to make some gifs about that this morning. I went to NBA.com's advanced box score, and you can actually click on the field goal attempts for each opposing player. You can watch all the attempts on video, kind of like you could do with Synergy Sports. And I looked at Kevin Garnett's field goal attempts from last night, or last night's game against Brooklyn, and I couldn't make it all the way through. It was just so painful. Smith was just completely avoiding Kevin Garnett. Just, he'd move to the paint, he wouldn't pay attention to where Garnett was, and Garnett would shift away, and he'd have a good 6-7 feet of space, and he'd catch a pass, and Smith couldn't correct in time. And it happened over and over and over again. Now, the shots weren't falling, so, you know, it didn't reflect in the box score, but, oh, it was just miserable to watch. I don't know when it's going to happen that it's going to start to click and he's going to play good defense at power forward, but that was the whole point, the whole argument people were having for why Smith could be a great pairing with Andre Drummond, and it's just not showing.
Right. He had the same problem against Teletovic last night, I recall. But I think, you know, he definitely deserves some criticism for that. But I think some of that is the Van Gundy design, that they're just struggling to figure out the exact cutoff points because, you know, Van Gundy's Orlando defenses, they were pretty conservative as far as big men leaving the paint. They want to give up that mid-range shot, and there's not that many players that could probably shoot as consistently as Garnett. So definitely you want, you know, to contest more than was happening last night. But I think the whole team struggled, you know, against Garnett, against other big men, against Joe Johnson, as far as, you know, how aggressive are we supposed to be in this system when we are told that it's, you know, stay on your assignments, don't overreact, and generally leaving guys open for mid-range shots is not a bad thing. It just so happened that, you know, players were hitting them all over the floor for Brooklyn last night.
Yeah, we'd be remiss if we didn't at least mention the whole the Joe Johnson show that happened last night. It's not often that you see a player just completely dominate a game. Well, I don't know if that's completely fair, but he just completely owned the Pistons last night. He
owned Kyle Singler last night, yeah, to a degree that I'd never been that disappointed in Singler's individual defense. And I know that Joe Johnson was hitting a lot of tough shots, but I was just praying that either Singler would figure it out or somebody else was going to get a chance to guard him, because it was just so bad last night.
Yeah, I had been defending Kyle Singler over the preseason and the summer as well, saying that, you know, he's actually not that bad of a defender. He's got size. He's pretty careful or capable, and in the right matchups, he can be a productive defender. But everything fell apart last night. That was just miserable. I mean, I haven't seen that bad defense out of a Pistons player in some time, and that's saying a lot.
So you don't remember any of Brandon Jennings' games last year? Is it already out of mind?
Over the summer, and I don't remember any of Jennings' games from last year.
Well, especially in the fourth quarter last night, Joe Johnson, you know, exploded 7 of 9 shooting, 15 points in the fourth. And the thing that was a little bit distressing, he didn't have a single free throw attempt, right? Like, if a guy's burning you that bad, like, maybe you feel like you can't because, you know, some of your big guys are in foul trouble or whatever the case is. But, like, I don't know, just put him on the free throw line. Like, make him earn it there. I mean, granted, Joe Johnson's the type of guy that he's going to earn it there. Like, he will make a fair number of those. But, I don't know, it's just kind of like, it was a little too hands off, like just kind of get in his face, you know, get up on him. And yeah, in the fourth, at least, that wasn't, you know, we can't even point the finger at Singler. Singler didn't play a minute in the fourth. So like, it was just kind of like, I don't know. It was a little surprising just with how much ease that Johnson was able to take over the game and basically just, put it on ice.
Yeah. And I think what we've seen is that Van Gundy, you know, the Pistons are sort of been in these games. They're hanging around and they just can't sort of seal that deal yet. And I think what it is just Van Gundy doesn't know where the solution is when a problem crops up. He doesn't know the team well enough. He doesn't know how the players are fitting into the system well enough, because it's so early that, you know, okay, well, Joe Johnson is going off on our guys, so how am I going to rejigger this rotation so that we can shut him down or make someone else execute? And I think that just takes time to figure out whose number you call in that situation so that that doesn't happen.
You know, and one thing that, Sean, I know that you tweeted last night, and you've tweeted in the past of just Van Gundy's track record, like his first year in Miami, what'd they start, 0-7?
0-7,
and then they finished the year 42-40. So, I mean, all's not lost. Like, they can still kind of bounce back from this. You know, once he becomes a little bit more accustomed with the roster, and once the roster becomes more accustomed with him too, just as importantly, I hope that we don't wait 8 games to see the first win. I hope they don't make it that hard on themselves. But yeah, you know, we should stress with all of our criticism here, like, this is a, We're diving in and we're talking about the nitty gritty and we're dissecting this, but we're doing that because we're super hardcore fans. We also do have the perspective that, hey, we're talking about 3 games here. So There's still plenty of time for things to kind of work themselves out, but yeah, hopefully it happens sooner than later.
Right. I mean, I hated watching that first opening night game just as a display of basketball. It was not what I wanted to see, especially from the Pistons. But these last two games, they've been enjoyable to see, you know, the players on the floor, seeing how they're trying to execute. You know, they're just not getting it done right now. But it's, you know, 0-3 is not good, but I'm still glad that the Pistons hired Stan Van Gundy and didn't keep, you know, Maurice Cheeks around. I'm seeing a lot of things on Twitter about how, you know, Maurice Cheeks is probably laughing to himself because he got fired with these same players and they still can't win. Well, I'm seeing, you know, a lot of different things just in these first few games than we saw in the Maurice Cheeks era. And, you know, they'll win soon and hopefully they'll start winning consistently.
Well, that actually begs the question. If that doesn't happen, if they don't start picking up wins by the All-Star game, will Stan Van Gundy fire Stan Van Gundy?
I think they would argue over a severance.
That reminds me of Minnesota, Flip Saunders hiring Flip Saunders.
Well, he was charged with finding the best available coach. It just so happened to be himself.
No, yeah, I think it'll come around. I think especially, you know, going back to something that we talked about early on was, you know, the three-point shooters. Like, if they are even just an average three-point shooting team, then all of a sudden these margins become a little bit closer, and we're talking about, you know, we're talking about real happy things right now. You know, I think collectively there's just a handful of things that are all at the same time the team is kind of struggling to figure out, but I think it'll click, and when it all starts to click at the same time, I think people, you know, I'm still really optimistic. I think people will be really surprised at how good this team could be, you know. But then again, I'm a notorious optimist. But
the only thing that really concerns me, maybe this is the subject for a future podcast, but I think there's a glaring spot where you can say, should the team have invested more heavily in shoring up the small forward position? Because, I mean, you have your incumbent Singler, who was never great, but he seemed serviceable. And they spent, you know, $4.5 million on Caron Butler and $1 million or so on Cartier Martin as a sort of shooting guard, small forward hybrid. But, I mean, they had money available. They probably could have enticed a higher profile player to take over that spot. And if you really had a better offensive playmaker at the three, I think a lot of this would have sorted itself out as well. And I just don't think there's a solution on the team to really, really improve the small forward position all year.
You know, I'm curious, you know, with fans, we're obviously focused almost entirely on the current year, but I'm really curious if Van Gundy kind of looked at this as a multi-year approach of, you know, you kind of lay down a little bit of a foundation and then you kind of go after those, you know, you can still pick up some more foundational blocks next year.
I think there's no doubt about that, because I think if he saw it any other way, he would have either, well, he probably would have dealt Monroe in a sign and trade.
Right.
And I think he's just sort of in that wait and see mode where he wants to, I think he wants that cap space and he wants that flexibility going forward. And or he wants Monroe back.
I'm also curious to see, you know, once Jody Meeks is back, how often we'll actually see Meeks and Pope on the court at the same time. I don't think it's your solution to, you know, for 35 minutes a game, but I do think that there will be stretches where, you know, maybe KCP kind of slides over with certain matchups. Maybe, you know, maybe Martin's out there a little bit too. And I don't know. I do think that injuries with Meeks and Martin have kind of, you know, because they're newcomers and because we haven't really seen what they can do in the regular season, I think it's really easy for fans to kind of forget about them a little bit. But this team that we've seen for the first three games, like, well, first of all, we haven't seen any of them at full strength. And we've only seen one of them at, like, close to full strength, you know, with Monroe being back. So, you know, as players start to come back and as players get more comfortable, I think it'll be a completely different completely different flow. Because let's be honest, like, I thought the preseason was really fun. Like, I'm almost not ready to let that go. Like, I thought that was a, you know, 5-2, second best in the East. Like, Yeah, I know it's preseason. I know most of the teams aren't really trying, and I know most of the starters for the opposing teams weren't playing a whole lot of minutes, you know, probably not as much as Detroit's were. But I had a really good time watching that team. It was a fun team. And we haven't had a chance to see that team yet just because of injuries. So
yeah, and the defense was good. And I mean, that's just personally, that's what I'm starved for, is good quality defense in Detroit. And we still haven't seen that in the regular season, but I'm very confident that we're going to have a good defensive team when everything's said and done. And I don't think you can really discount the fact that for the first two games, the two best offensive players were out. And in the third game, one of the two best offensive players was out in Meeks. Because, I mean, obviously the team was going to rely on his perimeter shooting in a major way. And you can just, you know, pencil in a lot of, like, six or seven of those three-pointers that were missed last night. He's probably going to make a handful of those, you know, every single game. So to be without him, I think, really hurts the team.
Yeah, just like there's been, like, the, you know, in the first couple games when Jennings struggled, Van Gundy had no hesitation putting in Augustine. The same thing would have been for KCP and Meeks. Like, those, and perhaps even more so. I think some people maybe thought, you know, that, you know, oh, maybe Augustine's going to push for the starting job. But I think Meeks actually signed with the intention of, I'm going to win the starting job, right? So I don't think we should I don't think it can be overstated just how much the team is missing him right now. But, you know, we'll find out. Unfortunately, it's probably going to still be another 3 weeks or so, something like that. I can't remember the exact timeline for when his return is, but it's still going to be a little time before Meeks comes back. But hopefully he's able to come back and bounce back and be the player that he was last year, be the player that he was for most of his career.
Right. I mean, at the very worst, he's a catch-and-shoot three-point threat every time he touches the ball. And last year, he was even a little better than that. So that's, you know, precisely what this team is lacking right now. If they had a decent three-point shooter last night, they would have won that game, I'm pretty sure. And they just didn't. They went 1 of 17. You're not going to win basketball games going 1 of 17 from the three-point line.
No, that's just horrible. That's really bad. Yeah, and the frustrating thing, in the first couple of games, they were, like, really bad at the line. So it was a little bit of a – it was kind of annoying last night that you know, against the Nets, that they were finally decent at the line, but you know, 25 of 35, but it was wasted by the fact that they were shooting 1 of 17 from 3-point. But all right, we're beating that dead a little bit. So how about questions going forward? You know, we kind of touched upon this a little bit, but last night, you know, with a couple days of rest, you know, obviously Van Gundy had to go a little bit deeper with his bench, knowing that he had a back-to-back to open the year, but with a couple days rest, only three bench players, and that was with having Moose back. So what do you think? Like, how deep of a rotation do you think Van Gundy's going to go on a night-to-night basis?
I think we're seeing pretty close to what it's going to end up being. If I had a little bit more time, I'd look at what he ran in Orlando. But in terms of the front court, at least, I don't think we're going to see a lot of Jarebko. I would like to see a lot of Jarebko, both as a basketball player and because he's just a beautiful human being. You know, I think we're going to see a similar play out to how it's been. I think it might be some time until Moose actually gets a chance to start a power forward. All I care about is that he gets more shot attempts and more minutes than Josh Smith. I think that will yield a productive front court. And then in the back court, it'll probably stay the same this way until Meeks is back. I hope that we've seen the end of Brandon Jennings getting pulled early. I'm hoping that it'll be a little bit more normalcy for him, 30, 32 minutes a game and a regular role. The only question at this point, I think, is going to be small forward, which you just kind of hinted at, Matt. I think that it's going to be curious if Singler continues to play this way, how long he'll keep the starting job, and if he loses it, who will stand in its place. I think that's really the only question mark for me at this point.
And I think, you know, it's way too early to make any sort of proclamations or anything, but so let's say Meeks comes back and, you know, he provides that three-point offense that we're presuming he does, and Monroe outplays Smith and earns a spot in the starting lineup. So who do you want as a shooting guard, with either Monroe as your starter or Smith as your starter. In both cases, do you want Meeks? In one of those cases, do you want Pope? I'm just sort of curious how this sort of balance that he's going to have to achieve with what we hope will be some depth at power forward and some depth at shooting guard, how that plays out with who gets minutes with who starts, who finishes, and things like that.
I don't know the answer, honestly. I think Van Gundy, well, you know, let me preface this. I think most NBA coaches would kind of prefer for just a little bit of stability in their starting lineup. And I think players in general would prefer that. So, like, I don't know if it's, you know, I think we're going to end up, one of those power forwards is going to end up settling into that starting job. And I think, I don't know if Van Gundy's decision about who gets the starting shooting guard job will be dependent on that. I kind of think of those as two separate things. I think it'll probably, if KCP continues to struggle with his shot, then I think it's, you know, goes without saying that Meeks will certainly get the opportunity there. But if KCP can at least start, like, you know, scratching his potential and showing a little bit more signs of being able to knock down those shots, then, you know, I'd like to, the optimist in me thinks that he can kind of get into a groove and he might be able to ride it out and hold on to that job for the entire season. But I don't, if KCP can do what we think he can do, then I don't see a reason to kind of pair them up depending on the rest of the lineup.
Yeah, I'm just kind of curious how the rotation in general shakes out. Like, you want to put Monroe in a position where, you know, he's with players that can, you know, they all feed off each other. And I think you want the same thing for Josh Smith. And so just who that personnel is on the floor at that time is sort of an interesting question, and I'm not really sure of what the best answer is.
You know, I was disappointed that we haven't seen more of Dinwiddie. Obviously, he only played the one preseason game, but then he played the opener. He played 8 minutes off the bench. For a guy like KCP who's struggling as much as he has, you know, obviously Dinwiddie is a natural point guard, but he has the size certainly to play shooting guard, and he has the shooting ability from long distance. You know, he didn't really do too much in that opener. He kind of had a quiet 8 minutes. He missed his only shot. He had one assist and a foul. So, I mean, he basically did almost nothing during his time on the court in terms of, you know, putting points on the board. Well, he literally did nothing in terms of putting points on the board. But for as much as KCP has struggled, I guess that's really an indication of the amount of faith that Van Gundy has in him to kind of work it out, that he hasn't decided, you know what, I'm going to give Spencer, you know, I'm going to give the rookie, you know, 5 to 10 minutes here. While KCP kind of you know, until he heats up, he's really shown his faith in KCP to just kind of shoot through it and become the player that we think he can be, which I'm going to take as, given the amount of leash that he's had with Jennings, I'm going to take that as a sign of hope that KCP he must be killing it in practice, like he must be showing enough to convince Van Gundy that he's the guy. So I don't know, I guess, you know, maybe in a way it's hopeful, the faith that Van Gundy has shown in him, but it also is a little bit curious that the rookie hasn't gotten any more burn after that opener.
Yeah, I think it probably just has to do with probably being a little overmatched on defense and not familiar with the speed of the NBA. And so I think it might be a little bit before he gets kind of thrown to the wolves again. I think he played strictly because of, you know, just how depleted the shooting guard position is with Meeks and Martin out. But I'm actually curious what the long-term prognosis is for Martin. He has a plantar fasciitis strain, and I know that players that deal with plantar fasciitis, it's a lingering problem all year. It can keep them out for an extended period of time. I don't think this is the most significant version of that injury, but the team's been pretty quiet. As far as I know, he's just sort of day-to-day, and he's missed the first three games. But like I said earlier, I think with him available, it would have just given Van Gundy another tool to kind of shore up either the shooting guard or the small forward spot when something wasn't going quite right.
Had you told me this summer when Martin signed that we would be so curious and worried about his return at this time of the season, I wouldn't have felt too good about that.
I just feel bad that Van Gundy doesn't have a way to really spell a player who's struggling. I mean, as much as we want to talk about KCP's shooting struggles and Singler not really delivering on defense and a little less on offense, it's just the only person he can really turn to is Caron Butler or going to a two-point guard backcourt. And that's, you know, that is not the optimal situation you want to find yourself in.
No.
And also, just to, you know, I know you were saying that in jest, Mike, but you know, I was very underwhelmed by the signing of Cartier Martin, but just as much, I was very impressed by him in the preseason. I thought that he looks like he's going to be a player that, in terms of bang for the buck, is going to be very productive. You know, I know that there's, you know, I've seen some of the beat writers tweet about how, you know, he's going to be, you know, ultimately when everyone's healthy, he's going to be just riding the bench. But I don't know. He looks like a guy that he just doesn't make too many mistakes when he's on the court. And, you know, you don't want your season to hinge on a guy like Cartier Martin, but he can be surprisingly productive in limited minutes. And even if he's, you know, even if he's only given 10 minutes a game, something like that, when you have a guy like KCP struggling as bad as he is, you know, those 10 minutes might be the difference.
Right. You know, there's a reason why a 29-year-old player who's been in the NBA for six seasons with five teams, there's a reason he stuck around for so long. And, you know, just looking at his numbers, there's nothing that really pops out about him. But seeing his play in the preseason was just kind of a revelation that he is actually a pretty important part of this Pistons team, especially right now when we're so hampered by injuries. So I definitely understand the interest and the curiosity about when he's going to return. And like you, Matt, I was pretty blown away by him in the preseason. I don't see him ever starting, but, you know, just having him on the team is going to make me feel a lot better when players like Kyle Singler are performing so poorly on defense and the team needs some help.
Right. To me, he's just sort of that guy you can turn to. You know, if somebody's struggling on defense, you can put him out there and say, you know, we got to guard this guy for the next 5-6 minutes and make sure he's not killing us. Or if a guy's struggling on offense, just, you know, somebody that's out there on the perimeter that can, you know, force the defense to react or hit that open shot. He has the skill to do both of those. I mean, he's not a world beater in any sense, offensively or defensively, but he's not going to hurt you either. And the Pistons just need somebody on the floor, really, in this early going that can execute on both ends of the floor. And it's a shame that he's out and can't really provide that opportunity, especially with Meeks injured. He really could have cemented his importance in the rotation if he was available.
All right, I'm going to put you guys on the spot. The Pistons actually have a nice restful week coming up. They only play twice in the next 7 days. They play Wednesday at home against the Knicks, and they play Friday at home against the Bucks. Assuming that we're able to you know, we're recording this on Sunday, assuming that we're able to meet up next Sunday, what's going to be their record a week from today?
I'm going to say 1-4. I think they'll lose to the Bucks, but they'll beat the Knicks.
Ooh, I'm going to say 1-4. I say they beat the Bucks, lose to the Knicks.
All right, you're on, Sean.
Loser is off the site.
Ooh.
Uh-oh.
I'm gonna go out on a limb. I'm gonna say 2-3.
Classic Matt.
Yeah, classic. Yep. Matt.
That's Matt Watson right there, everybody.
yeah, the schedule, it's a you know, I'm looking at the schedule right now. It's a little funky to start the year. I mean, I guess the schedule's always like this, but they play twice coming up this week, and then they play five times the week after that. So I think it's really important for them to take advantage of having a little bit of rest, having a little bit of more practice time. Once you get going on the road and you start playing some more back-to-backs, you just lose the opportunity to do any kind of practice. So I'm really optimistic that with a couple more days, they'll have with a couple of days between each of these games, that they'll have time to kind of reset, kind of get back to what was working so well in the preseason, kind of get back to the solid foundations of Van Gundy's both offense and defense. But yeah, I don't know. I'm going 3-2.
And I think it's really invaluable this early practice time so that Van Gundy has sort of game situations and game film to react to point to and sort of now they've all gone through the situation together, he can be more pointed about what he's asking his players to execute, and, you know, cite specific examples where there's, you know, failure on the court or success on the court, and, you know, react accordingly. So I think it's good for the Pistons to have this extra sort of space between the games early in the year, so that especially offensively. I mean, Van Gundy admitted he didn't do much offensively in the preseason just because there's so much to cover defensively, and they're sort of not performing up to snuff on both ends of the court. But with Monroe back, hopefully he can really instill some more solid offensive schemes into the game plan.
I agree. I agree with everything you just said.
Yep.
Classic Matt.
Well, I think we basically about covered everything that we wanted to talk about. Did you guys have any other closing thoughts?
I have a stat of the week to share.
All right.
I just kind of discovered it. I'm looking at the team shooting stats for these last three games, and I know we don't have a conspiracy against Josh Smith, so don't think that's where this is coming from, but I noticed something pretty funny. He's shooting 44% right under the basket, where he's usually his strongest, and he's shooting 47% from long two.
Oh.
So that's your stat of the week.
Let's hope that my previous observation that he is actually oblivious to stats and oblivious to box scores is true.
And never has it been more appropriate to say small sample size than right there.
All right, guys. Well, thanks for joining me. Well, like I said earlier, apologize for the long delay between podcasts, but hopefully we'll get back in the flow and get back to doing this on a weekly basis. But this was fun, guys.
Yeah,
thanks a lot.
Thank you, Sean.
All right, talk to you guys later.
Adios.